the Bad Christian, or sermons on the seven deadly sins and the different sins against God and our neighbor which flow therefrom. By the Reverend Father Francis Hunault, translated from the original German edition of Cologne, 1740. By the Reverend J. Allen, D.D. Imprimatur, Martyr, Bishop James D. Ricard, copyright 1887. On Injustice as an Effect of Avarice, preached on the 12th Sunday after Pentecost. Whatsoever thou shalt spend over and above, I, at my return, will repay thee. St. Luke chapter 10, verse 35. And quite right, too. Whatever is given out by a third person for the good of another ought to be given back again. If the Samaritan, of whom we read in today's Gospel, had not performed his promise and repaid the host for looking after the wounded traveler, he would indeed have done a work of mercy and charity to one, but he would have been guilty of injustice to the other. Injustice is of a very frequent occurrence nowadays, my dear brethren. I will still continue to speak of avarice or of the inordinate desire of worldly goods. I have shown that this vice is a cause of many different kinds of sin, but especially of injustice, since men, blinded by love of money, seek to gain it by unjust means. In my last sermon, I have briefly alluded to the fact that avarice is a common vice from which few men are quite free. I shall now prove that unjust avarice is also a very common vice. In order to make matters clearer, I shall divide the unjust into three classes, namely, those who take unjustly what belongs to others, those who keep what belongs to others, and those who injure the property of others. There are many who take what belongs to others, the first part. Many who keep what belongs to others, the second part. Many who injure what belongs to others, the third part, which will assume the form of a catechetical instruction, since many grown-up people do not attend catechism in the parish churches on Sundays, although they may be as much in need of it as children are. I began, then, trusting in the help of the Holy Ghost and in the intercession of Mary, the Mother of God, and that of the Holy Angels' Guardian, to the end that if ever we love money, we may at least be careful not to possess anything unjustly. The first kind of injustice is committed by those who take what does not belong to them. I am not speaking now of thieves and highway robbers who attack and rob travelers or break into houses at night, for it is evident that such people commit grievous sin and violate the laws of justice most flagrantly. The very name of thief is detested by everyone, and imprisonment or hard labor is looked upon as meek punishment for those who thus outrage the law. But how true it is that great thieves are let off while petty ones are imprisoned. How many there are who, under some plausible pretext or other, actually steal more than would be required to condemn them to prison. Amongst the number of such thieves, to begin with the head of the family, are those mothers and fathers who rob their children by sharing with the children of a second marriage that which belongs by right only to the children of the first, or by wronging their children out of the inheritance that justly belongs to them, for the sake of favoring unduly the child they love most. Injustice of that kind gives rise very often to hatred and contention between brothers and sisters. of the same class are those husbands who rob their wives by squandering away their marriage portions with dissolute companions and feasting and carousing while their poor wives and children are half-starved. It is a sin that cries to heaven for a man thus to wrong those who have every right to look up to him for help and support. To the same class belong those wives and mothers who rob their husbands by spending, for instance, without their husband's knowledge and consent, a considerable sum out of the common fund, by concealing and hoarding up for themselves that they may be richer when their husbands die, money that should go to the children or other lawful heirs, by giving considerable sums to their parents and relations, by giving alms profusely, or being too lavish in supporting any pious work, not to speak of spending money for other purposes. All these acts are thefts and injustices which bind to restitution. Remember, however, that without their husband's knowledge and consent, because if the latter know what is being done and say nothing, or if they give their wives permission to act as they please in money matters relating to household expenses, then there is no theft committed. Again, I have said, if they spend a considerable sum, because it is not unlawful for them to incur the ordinary expenses suitable to their act station, or to give alms reasonably and according to their means, and if their parents are poor, they must give to them in preference to others, even without the knowledge and consent of their husbands. For in such cases, the latter would have no reasonable grounds for objecting. To this class also belong children who rob their parents by stealing money from them, or, as sons who are away in foreign countries frequently do, by pretending to be in want of money and then spending what their parents send them in drinking, gambling, and similar ways, or when they marry, by taking out of their father's house whatever they can secretly lay hands on, a thing which is done sometimes without the least scruple. Oh, they think, what belongs to my parents will be mine after their death. It is all the same if I take it now. But they are grievously mistaken. Hear what the Holy Ghost says in the book of Proverbs. He that stealeth anything from his father or from his mother and saith, this is no sin, is the partner of a murderer. Why a murderer? Because he treats his parents as if they were already dead, by taking possession of that which should not belong to him until after their death. Besides, who has given them a right to dispose of what must be divided equally between their brothers and sisters after their parents' death? If they were not guilty of robbing their parents, they could certainly be accused of theft towards their brothers and sisters, and of course, they are bound to make restitution. The same kind of theft is committed by servants who rob their masters and mistresses. This they do by often taking small things without permission, either for themselves or to give them to others, so that in time the things thus taken amount to considerable value. The same guilt is incurred by all those who receive such stolen things from servants or children, or who buy them, although they have a reasonable suspicion that they have been taken without the consent of masters or parents. Sometimes servants and laborers, under the pretext of occult compensation, take away secretly from their employers more than they agreed upon as payment for their work, whether they pretend that their wages are too small, or that they have done something over and above what was agreed upon, for which, as they think, they ought to be paid, although they promised to do it freely and for nothing when making the agreement. Ah, my dear people, that is not right. For amongst the propositions condemned by Innocent the 11th, there is the 37th, which reads as follows. Men and maidservants may secretly take from their employers whatever is necessary to compensate them for the work they do, for which they think their salary is not sufficient. This proposition, I say, is condemned by the church as erroneous. You say that you do not take much, but if every servant were to take as much as you imagine you have a right to do, the master would be at a considerable loss. What you take each time is small, but it accumulates and forms, at last, matter of a grievous theft, which binds you under pain of mortal sin to restitution. As I have elsewhere explained more at length when I was speaking of the duties of servants to their employers. Those workmen are also guilty of theft who, when they are supplied with the material for the work they undertake, such as silver, silk, woolen stuffs, clothes, leather, timber, and so forth, keep for themselves, besides the wages agreed on, the pieces of the materials which are over and which might still be useful to the lawful owner. There are many who continue acting in that manner for years and years, so that they gain considerable thereby, which they have no right to. Gamblers, who cheat at play and win money thereby, are also guilty of theft, unless it is free for their opponents in the game to make use of the same tricks as a means of passing the time. But if the latter are playing seriously and fairly, he who cheats is bound in conscience to restore what he has won. Thefts, and grievous ones too, are committed also by those merchants and storekeepers who use short weights and measures, even if the measure is only a straw's breadth too short, or the weight only an ounce too light. If such people continue and mean to continue that mode of action for a long time, they are in a constant state of mortal sin, which they commit every time they sell in that way, because they have constantly the intention of making an unjust profit, which will amount in the end to grievous matter. They also sin against justice, who sell old, damaged goods as if they were new, and for the same price, who induce simple, inexperienced people to pay a higher price than the thing is worth, and who, when they see that a customer is in a hurry for a thing and that he cannot have it elsewhere, charge him much higher for it. With these may be classed innkeepers, who make rich people pay more for accommodations than others on the pretext that they can afford it better, or that such an opportunity of making a trifle does not often occur. Thefts, and grievous ones, too, are committed also by those who take wood from forests, or vegetables and fruit from gardens, or grapes from vineyards, or fish from ponds without the owner's permission, as well as by those who encroach little by little on their neighbor's land, so as to increase their own, or who remove their landmarks on the foolish pretext that others deceive them in that way. That is no excuse at all. No matter what is stolen from me, I have no right to steal from others. Theft is never allowed. These and similar thefts, my dear brethren, generally remain undetected, so that the injured person is not aware that he has been wronged. But there are often thefts which do not long remain unnoticed, on account of their disastrous defects. Sometimes the wolves get into the vineyard when the grapes are beginning to ripen. The birds, too, come and eat the grapes. But what a difference between the two. The wolf opens his jaws and tears down a whole vine so that he leaves proof enough of his presence behind him. While 10 birds pecking here and there do so little damage that it is hardly noticed. Ah, how many families there are in the world who were once in a good position, but are now reduced to poverty by the unjust tricks and artifices of the rich and powerful who deceived and oppressed them. Tell me, you poor and oppressed ones, was it wolves or birds that thus made away with your property? But your present poverty is answer enough and shows how you were plundered. You merchants, whose account books are full of bad debts, contracted dishonestly, of which you will never receive a farthing. You, who have suffered from lawsuits that the lawyers spun out longer than necessary, although the case might be finished in a day, so clear was your right. You who were forced by the bribery or influenced, employed by your antagonist, or by the ignorance or culpable negligence of those who undertook to plead your cause, to suffer from an unjust sentence and to pay heavy law expenses besides. You who have been compelled to satisfy unjust claims. You poor widows and orphans who have lost all you had through the chicanery of this designing people. Tell me, what sort of plunders have gotten to your vineyard? Had they four legs or two? Were they wolves or birds? It is easy to tell, for they have left you proof enough of their presence. According to the words of the Holy Ghost, the wild ass is the lion's prey in the desert, so also the poor are devoured by the rich. Just as a weak animal cannot defend itself against the attack of the lion, so the poor and weak are made to protect their property from the machinations of the rich, who seize it and batten on it. In the Boldest Life of St. Rictuda, on the 12th of May, there is an account of a rich man who was having his corn brought in from the field. On the way, he passed by another field in which the corn was much better than his. He immediately told the man who was driving the wagon to hold still and take some of the good sheaves with him. And meanwhile, he himself, who was on horseback, would keep a good lookout so that no one might be witness of the theft. The man did as he was ordered and came back laden with sheaves. He put them on the wagon and made ready to start again. But the oxen which were drawing it refused to move a step. No beating or whipping was of any use. The rich man, seeing this, harnessed his own horse in front of the oxen to help them, but all in vain. They would not move until the stolen sheaves were returned to their owner. Ah, my dear brethren, if I had those oxen, I could give you ocular proof of many acts of injustice. I could bring them to the gates of many cities in the world and yoke them on to the wagons that are laden with grain and wine to sell in the city. I believe that very often they would stand stock still and not move an inch, because the grain and wine are the property of poor people who, in times of dearth or scarcity, were forced to buy on credit, trusting to the next harvest for the means of paying, and when the harvest came round, had to sell their crops to their creditors at a shamefully low price. They would stand still and refuse to draw many a chest full of money, because it is money extorted from the poor by usurers, who take advantage of the necessities of others to make them pay 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10% for money lent, and who, sometimes, when the debtors are unable to pay, force them to sell everything they have at a loss. They would refuse to draw many a load of silver plate because it belonged to poor citizens who, in times of scarcity, were forced to pledge it for a very small sum, and since they were unable to redeem it, had to leave it in the hands of strangers without getting any more for it. My good people, was it wolves or birds that robbed you? But you need not answer. The thing is clear enough. There are other wolves who will not even take the trouble to go into the vineyard in order to plunder it. They compel those whom they mean to rob to bring the booty to their houses. Of this kind are avaricious officials, who will not stir hand or foot to help others unless they are paid for it. Whence is it that many a poor man cannot get justice done for him before he has secured their help by the sacrifice of his little savings? A certain judge who was very pious and at the same time of a pleasant disposition had a cat which used to run away whenever a plate of food was given her. But if the least bite was thrown on the floor, she devoured it eagerly. He had also a big dog which would never take a whole loaf or a large piece of meat, but would willingly accept a small piece of bread or meat. Their owner used to say that he kept those two animals for the sake of the lesson they taught him. They refuse, he said, a great quantity of food, because they think it is not for them, but for their master. They take little bites, because they know that they do not injure him thereby. It is said that we judges have claws and teeth, with which we seize upon and devour everything. My claws are like the claws of my cat, my teeth like those of my dog. He who offers me a valuable present, even out of gratitude, must go away with it again. But a small present I willingly accept, so as not to put the giver to shame, and even that I do not take until I have helped him, according to my duty, to secure his rights. Oh, if all who hold similar offices were of those dispositions, how many acts of injustice would be avoided, how many more poor people would be saved from loss. But, unfortunately, the contrary is more frequently the case, and men in office resemble thievish cats and hungry dogs. They're not content with small bites, but always grasp at as much as they can lay hold of. If their clients bring them presents of trifling value, they are turned off without the least hope of getting what is their due. Of such thieves, the psalmist says, in whose hands are iniquities, their right hand is filled with gifts. But they say, I do no wrong. I do no one any wrong by taking what is freely offered me. People are quite free to give or not, just as they like. That is a likely thing indeed, and a novel kind of free will. They have the same kind of free will as those unfortunates who get into the claws of usurers and are forced by dire necessity to pay back twice as much as they have received. They have the same kind of free will as those who fall into the hands of highway robbers and can save their lives only by giving up all their money. What a scene there will be when all those thieves will hear the words, pay what thou owest. Give up thy ill-gotten wealth. Herewith I leave them the responsibility of their own acts. And I will go on to speak of the second kind of injustice, which is committed by those who keep what does not belong to them. This will be the second part. I must again commence with masters and mistresses who do not pay their servants, tradesmen, or laborers the proper wages, or who without just cause retain something out of their wages, or make them wait a long time before paying them. It sometimes happens that the servant maid breaks a ewer, a rather tangible thing. Price of it is at once deducted from her wages. That is an injustice. And why? Because, in order that I may have a claim to justice, to withhold what belongs to another, it is required that he should have taken away something of mine, or have done me some injury through culpable negligence or malice. Or, if such is not the case, it would be required that he should still have the stolen or injured article in his possession, or at least that he should have drawn some profit from the damage done. Now, it is certain that a servant has a right to the wages agreed at the expiration of the appointed time. It is equally certain that whatever injury was caused by breaking things was not caused through any sinful negligence or malice, but through sheer accident. And it is certain, too, that no profit has occurred to the servant thereby, and that the broken article is not in her possession. Therefore, no one has any right to deprive her of what is justly due to her. It is true that in law, they who impose the property of another are bound to make good the loss. It is true that in law, they who injure the property of another are bound to make good the loss, whether they committed a sin or not, because men cannot see what passes in the conscience, nor can they judge of another's intention, that they can consider only the outward act. Masters and mistresses, however, are not judges in their own case, and of course they must look upon their servants as not guilty in conscience. There is a remarkable saying of the Holy Ghost on this subject in the book of Ecclesiasticus. He that sheddeth blood and he that defraudeth the labor of his hire are brothers. He that taketh away the bread gotten by sweat is like him that killeth his neighbor. But how can that be? Is not the life of the human being of more account than the wages of a servant or a piece of bread? Does not he who commits a far greater guilt than he who defrauds a labor of his hire? If so, why are they both classed together as brothers? I find the reason of that after. The bread of the needy is the life of the poor. He that defraudeth them thereof is a man of blood. For it takes away their livelihood. It is an injustice to deduct anything from or to retain a legacy belonging to a rich man, although he can bear the loss very well. But to take away or retain even a few points from a poor laborer who has nothing except what he can earn by the sweat of his brow is a far greater injustice. Therefore, in the book of Deuteronomy, God gives the express command, "Thou shalt not refuse the hire of the needy, but thou shalt pay him the price of his labor the same day before the going down of the sun." Why before the going down of the sun? Why today and not tomorrow? Because he is poor and with it maintaineth his life, lest he cry against thee to the Lord, and it be reputed to thee for a sin. This kind of injustice is also committed by those who do not pay their debts when they can, or who borrow money or make purchases foreseeing that they will not be able to pay, thus injuring others and retaining what belongs to them. St. Francis of Paula was once brought into the treasury of the King of Naples, in which there were great heaps of money. He put his hand into one of them, and, filling it with money, pressed the pieces together until the blood ran out of it between his fingers. If this saint could come down from heaven and seize in his hand certain hidden treasures, magnificent houses, fine clothes, costly furniture, silver plate, etc., do you not think, my dear brethren, that in many cases blood would run out between his fingers, the blood of poor creditors, storekeepers, and laborers who have not been paid for their goods or their work? But state and splendor must be kept up while the storekeepers can write down the bad debts in their books, and the poor laborers must carefully refrain from even asking what is due to them, or else they will get nothing but hard words and harsh treatment. It is to no purpose that some say they are unable to pay just now what they owe, because they continue their usual extravagant style of living, although they are bound in conscience in their present circumstances to curtail their expenses. Read the 18th chapter of the Gospel of St. Matthew, and you will find one of those unjust debtors in the parable of the king who demanded an account of his servants. Amongst others, there came to him one who owed him 10,000 talents, and as he had not wherewith to pay it, his Lord commanded that he should be sold, and all that he had, and payment to be made. You may notice in this passage two expressions that seem to contradict each other, namely, as he had not wherewith to pay, and his Lord commanded that he should be sold, and all that he had, and payment to be made. How are these to be reconciled? If the servant had nothing, how could everything he had be sold? There is no doubt that the servant had enough, but not enough to pay his debts. If I gratify his sinful desires, his vanity, his gluttony, but he could not pay his debts. In fact, it turned out afterwards he was rich enough, for when he was on the point of being sold, he besought his master, saying, "Have patience with me, and I will pay thee all." It is just the same with those rich people who refuse to pay what they owe. If they look at the state they keep up, servants they have, the magnificent dresses they wear, the sumptuous repast they indulge in, it will certainly appear that they have enough. Their granaries are filled with corn, their cellars with wine, their coffers with gold, their yearly revenues are considerable. In a word, there is no doubt that they have. But when there is a question of paying their debts, they are as poor as possible. They have not wherewith to pay. I might compare them to a hedgehog. That animal has a body, legs and feet like other animals. But if you go too near him, he curls himself and you see nothing but a prickly ball. These people say, "I cannot pay my debts now." In other words, they roll themselves up like the hedgehog. They have enough for themselves. But if anyone who has waited years, perhaps, for his money, ventures to ask them for it, they have nothing but hard words for him. What will those people do when they appear before the judge who searches the hearts of men and who judges justice itself? They also are guilty of injustice who, when they have anything to share with others or an account to square with them, and see that the latter are wronging themselves through error, either by not taking enough or by giving too much, they say nothing about it and keep all they can. In the same way, if a certain portion of crops, for instance, has to be shared with another, such as the third, sixth, or tenth part, it is wrong not to give him exactly what is his due. Many injustices are committed in this way, especially by heirs, who refuse the proper share to their co-legatees on the pretense that the latter have not appeared to claim it, or who do not devote to pious purposes the amount specified in the will. Ah, ye dead, rise from your graves and see what is done with the property you so piously willed to churches and to almshouses. Perhaps you will still find it in the hands of those whom you have enriched. God knows what sort of consciences such people have. Injustice is also committed by all who receive and purchase stolen goods, or who appropriate things they find without making diligent efforts to discover the owner. If I find a thing, and, as good Christians always do, advertise it publicly without loss of time, and if no owner appears to claim it after a considerable interval, I can then keep it with a good conscience. But if I fail to give public notice of the matter, or put off doing so for a long time, I can never become a lawful possessor of the thing on account of my culpable negligence in looking for the owner, but must give it to the poor in case the lawful proprietor does not appear. The same holds good for those who do not at once drive away strange animals that have strayed into their yards. I mean animals such as cows, pigs, poultry, etc., which are apt to find their way home again if driven away at once. While if they are kept in a few days, they grow accustomed to it. Many a one says to himself, "Oh, that sheep came to my flock of its own accord, came to my sty, that hen to my poultry yard. I did not drive it in, nor did I shut the gate on it. It can go back if it likes, or else the owner can come for it." No, Christians, that will not do. If you see an animal of the kind straying into your yard and do not drive it away immediately, it is the same as if you kept it, because the owner cannot know whether it has gone to you or to someone else. In all these cases, the rule is, give back everything you acquire unjustly. The third and last class of injustice is committed by those who, although they neither take away nor keep the property of others, yet injure it deliberately, as we shall see in the third part. The chief of these are judges, lawyers, officials, and others of the kind, who undertake the duties of their profession, knowing that they have not the knowledge, learning, or ability necessary to fulfill them. Or if they have the ability, are careless and dilatory in performing their duty, or take more upon themselves than they can properly attend to. These act unjustly, because they are the cause of all the injury that others suffer on account of their ignorance, negligence, or the number of unnecessary things they have taken on themselves, by which suits are prolonged, are concluded too hurriedly, and injustice that they are bound in conscience to make good. The same is to be said of those who knowingly entrust such offices to incompetent persons. What a fearful responsibility is thus incurred, although generally men make light of it. To this class belongs notaries who sign invalid, usurious, or unjust contracts, witnesses who give false testimony in a civil case, those who are sent to examine into an affair and who spin out the examination as bull in order to make more money by it, pettifoggers who, although they know a case to be unjust, undertake to defend it and urge an appeal against the judgment unfavorable to them, although they know that the appeal will be fruitless and that it will uselessly increase the expenses of their opponents. With these, mischievous thieves must be classed guardians who are careless of the property of their wards, housekeepers, servants, and others who do not look after what is entrusted to her or allow others to take it when they can prevent them from doing so. Drivers who, in order to make a shortcut, drive over cultivated land and injure the crops. Boatmen who drink out of the casks of wine they have in their boat belonging to other people and then fill up the cask with water, thereby doing great injury to others and receiving very small profit themselves. All, of whatever condition they may be, who utter base coin, even if they themselves are already deceived by having the same coin passed on them, all who harbor thieves, all who by command, counsel, approval, or hindrance are the cause of injury to others, all who take or give away a part of a thing without which part the thing is useless to its owner. These latter act like a hungry dog when it sees a piece of bread and butter in a child's hand. It makes a spring at it open mouth, and missing the bread, smiles with the child's finger. Such are they who, for instance, destroy a whole coat for the sake of getting a small piece of cloth, or pull down a whole branch in order to get a few apples, etc. The day would be too short, my dear brethren, for me to speak of all the different ways and injustices practiced. Oh, if all the injustice that is daily committed in the world were to meet its due, where would prisons enough be found? But what escapes the eyes and ears of earthly justice will one day be exposed to the whole world, examined and condemned by the justice of God. And unless true penance has been done and restitution made, it will be severely punished. St. Augustine, considering the sentence that will be pronounced against the wicked on the day of judgment, because they did not feed the hungry, nor give drink to the thirsty, nor clothe the naked, nor visit the sick and those in prison, cries out, "If he who did not give of his own is to be cast into the fire, what will become of him who stole the property of others? If he is to be sent to hell, to whom Christ can say, 'I was naked and you have not clothed me,' what sort of a hell will be in store for him to whom he can say, 'I was clothed, and you have taken the clothes from off my body'? If he who refused to shelter Christ in the person of his poor must take his place amongst the demons, what will become of him who by treachery and cunning has driven the poor from their homes? In a word, if he who has not done good to his neighbor will be lost forever, how can he who has in any way robbed and injured his neighbor hope to get to heaven? Ah, my brethren, let us all write deep in our hearts the words of the commandment: Thou shalt not covet anything that is thy neighbor's. It is forbidden even to desire, much less than it is allowed to take unjustly, to keep, or to injure what does not belong to us. The Almighty knows well that where there is desire and an opportunity offers, the hand will soon be stretched out to seize the coveted object. Therefore, even the desire of the thing is unlawful. Happy those households which resemble that of Tobias. That pious old man was blind, and not knowing what purchases his wife made here and there, he once heard a kid bleeding in the house. He became uneasy at once, thinking that it was stolen. "Take heed, lest perhaps it be stolen," said he. "Restore it to its owners, for it is not lawful for us either to eat or to touch anything that cometh by theft." "Hear this, Christians," says St. Augustine. He was unwilling to hear the sound of a theft in his house. I hope you will all have the same delicate ears, and that you will avoid all injustice, so that the name even of theft may not be heard in your houses. If the greed and a favorable opportunity should excite in you a desire of appropriating anything unjustly, recall to your minds at once the words of the Holy Ghost: "Better is a little with justice than great revenues with iniquity." And in fact, experience teaches that ill-gotten goods never bring a blessing, for so God has justly decreed. We might say that they come in at one door and go out at the other. They are like an uncooked morsel, which the stomach is obliged to reject, and with it the good food which it had begun to digest. Whatever just property man has made generally disappears with what he has acquired dishonestly, as happened to the Israelites in the desert. If one of them took more than his just share of the manna, all he had became corrupted in his hands. And even if ill-gotten goods did bring prosperity, would it not still be a foolish thing to take or keep what I know I must restore, besides being obliged to make good any loss I may have otherwise occasioned, if I wish to go to heaven? And not only that, but the whole time I possess anything unjustly, I am at variance with God and with my conscience, and I run the risk of condemning to hell not only myself, but my children and descendants, who will continue to possess the unjustly acquired wealth after me. Away then with such folly, away with such a blind love of gain. I would rather beg my bread from door to door than do a dishonest action. I do not wish to gain even a penny or a penny's worth unfairly. I will do the best I can to keep and to increase what I have for me and mine, but I will never exceed the limits of justice. Have I much? Then I will possess and enjoy it with a quiet conscience. Have I little or nothing? Then I will console myself with the thought that I have as much as God wishes me to have, and I shall have in the certain hope that having served God faithfully and contentedly on earth, I shall have an eternal treasure in heaven. Amen.